shores of El Pacifico. Bill Hendrick.
Poor baby.
Death was accidental.
Sir, can we talk to you about the noose and the sign you've got on your garage?
My colleagues in the Hispanic Congressional Caucus accepted voting for the health care reform bill.
Alcohol can expose children to different kinds of behaviors, even just language that I wouldn't want my child exposed to.
World famous Phil Hendrick Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And truth is our bitch on this show. I don't care, man, if we go down swinging, you know, on a third strike, at least we gave it our best shot. I'd rather do this show than any other show out there. I'd rather have this radio show than any other television or radio show out there. I've listened to psychology talk, financial talk. I've watched talking heads. I've listened to sports talk. I've listened to political talk. I've listened to liberal talk. And the best talk show that I've ever heard in my life is this one. So check us out online as well at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. You can pick up a backstage pass and watch, as well as listen to our show. You can watch our show, our video cast, each and every night. We also have a five-day video archive and, of course, our audio archives, including downloads of each show. A woman crashes her car while shaving her, you know, and she crashes the car. And that's long overdue. This hour, big story, I don't know if you heard, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, the very Court of Appeals that ruled that under God was unconstitutional, has now ruled that under God is not unconstitutional and that it is back in the Pledge of Allegiance. A federal appeals court in San Francisco upheld the use of the words under God in the Pledge of Allegiance, and in the phrase, in God we trust, on U.S. currency, rejecting arguments on Thursday that the phrases violate the separation of church and state. Here was their reasoning. And by the way, this is the argument that we made around Christmas time, and we make it every Christmas. And I think this is spot on, as they say. The court said that in God we trust and under God were not so much religious phrases or prayers, they were indications or representations of American culture. They represented a part of a very diverse American landscape in terms of attitude, opinion, culture, taste, etc. And so these words, in God we trust or under God, are not a prayer so much as they are ceremonial and patriotic. And that's exactly what we said when we talked about, you know, the Christmas trees and all of that jazz, you know, around Christmas time. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Coming on the line with us now is Don Mixa. Don Mixa is we've had him on a couple of times on the program. He's a professor of engineering at the University of Washington, or as they affectionately call it there, UW. And he joins us this hour to talk about this. Don, You're no stranger to the progressive or liberal point of view, but I have to tell you, you and I don't agree hardly on anything, and I guess we're not going to agree on this one either. I'm not a religious guy,
I understand,
but I think that under God, it ain't no thing. You know, I believe in the separation of church and state, but to me, this just isn't anything. This is just it's like the court said, it is a ceremonial.
Well, Phil, the use of under God or in God we trust, I'm a professor at UW, and I have an awful lot of contact with the liberal and progressive elements on our campus. I also have a lot of contact with the Student Atheist Union. We have a University of Washington Atheist Society and so forth. I fear, because I do have conversations with these students. We have I guess you would call a Sunday morning coffee clutch at the Starbucks down here in the mall, and we kick around a lot of things. I fear that the floodgates are going to open onto a new era here of the activist, for want of a better word, the jihadist, atheist.
You mean violent? Atheists?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what they have in mind. I know they're a very radical type of people. And I have to be honest with you, I have some sympathy with them because while I do agree with you that we should have a separation of church and state, I think when you use these clever arguments that the court uses to reinsert under God into the Pledge of Allegiance or reinsert in God we trust under the money that would have been taken off, I think when you use these clever arguments that they're using, you incite the working class student that we have here at UW, our atheist student, our progressive student, our liberal student, our very blue-collar students. They don't get a lot of the clever arguments and all of these clever phrases and these judges that, spend time at the theater or buying expensive cognacs for their wives. All they understand is that they don't want to hear the words under God because it's offensive to them. It sickens them. And I think we have to be very mindful of that.
You know, when you say it sickens them, let me go back to the man who originally brought the lawsuit. I remember this guy because I remember thinking, boy, what a pain in the ass this guy is. His name is Newdow. That's it. And apparently he brought this lawsuit. He's a doctor and a lawyer, which I suppose makes him something real special in the eyes of some people. The court said that he lacked the legal standing to file the suit because he did not have custody of the daughter that was being forced to recite the Pledge of Allegiance. So he didn't have any legal standing. So he filed an identical challenge on behalf of other parents who objected to the recitation of the pledge at school. And in 2005, a federal judge in Sacramento decided in Newdow's favor, ruling that the pledge was unconstitutional. He says he wants to be treated equally. He says that, he had his supporters of the phrase want to have their religious views espoused by the government. You agree with that?
I do. I have to agree with it for a couple of reasons. A lot of these atheists are my students. I have to have contact with them every day. And I enjoy having contact with them. But I can't take a point of view that is so diametrically opposed to them that I put myself at risk. That's number one. Number two, I do agree that we need to keep God out of the Pledge of Allegiance. The court making this ruling has incited our atheist students. It has incited our non-believing students. And it has incited the liberal and progressive revolutionary blue-collar and working-class student of the University of Washington other campuses who are made violently ill by even the sound of the word God.
That's what I wanted to mention.
Hold on for just a minute, Phil.
Yeah, but this guy, this Newdow guy, you'd almost think that this guy was being subjected to torture.
Well, it's not too far off. How so? How so? There are some people, Phil, in our society that, and I may be one of them. I want to be objective here, and so I don't want to tell you how I feel exactly. I could be one of them, and maybe I'm not one of them. But there are some people that when they hear the word God, they lose control of their bowels. They lose control of their bodily functions. They are so sickened by it, and they are so traumatized by it, that when they hear the name God or Jesus Christ, that they have no control over their physical reaction, and they have they vomit, they go into epileptic fit and seizure.
Is this a lesion or
no? It's the fact that they have been subjected to under God, so often, so much, and without any reason, really, any real constitutional reason, that it is like torture. And I would go so far as to say, were I arguing this before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, that if the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled that waterboarding, for instance, is illegal because it is torture, that subjecting an atheist who has said repeatedly, I don't want to hear it, why do you keep doing it to me? And yet we keep telling them, under God, that we are subjecting them to a kind of mind-numbing torture, almost as if it is a mind-cleansing or a mind-erasing type of phrase that renders one a hopeless vegetable. It's a horrible thought. One man dead, another a hopeless vegetable.
So you are saying to an atheist, hearing the word God is like waterboarding him.
To some. To others, they may become violent. I don't think we need a third front. On the one front, we're battling the jihadists, and on the other front, we're battling a rabid atheist underclass made all the more mentally unstable by the use of the word God to the point that these people have become dangerous. This is what I'm trying to say.
All right, we're with Don Mixa from the University of Washington as we talk about the phrase under God. It is now back in the Pledge of Allegiance. The ruling made by the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco upholding the use of the words under God. He says now that putting that phrase back into the Pledge of Allegiance is going to stir up, or it's going to incite atheists to perhaps violent acts. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
There's no need for an 8-year-old child to learn how to fire a machine gun unless he's living in Somalia. In which case, you know, line them up, man. The shooting range's open in Massachusetts.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL. We're talking here on the show about the U.S. 9th District Court of Appeals, which has ruled now, in a reversal of itself, that the phrase under God and the phrase in God we trust, actually, they are not unconstitutional phrases. Under God can go back into our Pledge of Allegiance. In God we trust is not unconstitutional when it appears on our money. This is the 9th U.S. Court of Appeals, which in 2004 and 2005 rendered decisions favorable to those who wanted these phrases removed, mostly atheists. Talking with us from the University of Washington, Seattle, is Don Mixa, is an engineering professor. Don, you're talking about atheists on campus, atheists elsewhere, who are going to react very negatively to this, which may include violence. Do you support that?
Well, you're putting me in a little bit of an uncomfortable position, Phil. I don't want to say whether I support it. I guess I have to say, if you want me to be honest with you, I have to say I understand it. I certainly do understand the frustration that atheists are feeling, because you're asking them to live with a phrase and a word that is anathema, which is physically uncomfortable to hear. I think you have to understand that it is a physical, revulsion. When you mention the name Jesus Christ, it is revolting. It is nausea causing. It, the Virgin Mary, any symbol, any icon, any. And so, do I agree? Do I?
Yeah. Do you concur, or do you? You say you understand it.
I understand it. I do understand. If atheists become violent, if we have to deal with a third front of atheists, godless atheists who have had it up to here with under God here and in God we trust there, I don't know what to say other than to say the following. We better sack up. I guess the only way I can say it.
Say what?
I think we better sack up.
Sack up.
That's right.
877-876-PHIL is the number here on the Phil Hendry Show. Over to a phone call in Gardena. Henry, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, I want to say that, I'm 52 years old. I've never ran into an atheist. I do realize that on, let's say, the Jackson dollar coin, it doesn't say any of the God we trust. That's probably the only thing that I've ever seen. And it needs to be in the Pledge of Allegiance. It's always been there. And this professor,
it's been there since
1915.
Yeah, and somebody inserted it in there. Someone inserted it in there. It wasn't always there. Yeah.
Well, it's been in there since 1915 when they put it in there.
No, the 1950s is when it was put in there, sir. Your information.
Okay, then I might be a little off there. But
a little off, yeah, about 40 years off.
Well, you say you have a class of all atheists. I've never heard of anything like that. You must.
I didn't
know,
say that. I said I had no atheists on. Yeah, you're not listening very carefully.
I know
atheists on campus, and say there is a group of atheists on campus that I'm in touch with, and I'm frightened. I'm frightened for what they're going to do, because they got the word today, and I saw them meeting. And
due respect, without the saying right. "God We Trust" and right. "Pledge Allegiance." Yeah. You realize that this world is pretty much doomed by people that think like that.
I don't know. I think that all I know is that we've got atheists out there that are ready to go to war. They're godless. And if you can imagine a man who is godless going to war, he's got nothing to lose. So I don't think there's a crucifixion. That doesn't bother him. See, crucifixion bothers a person that believes in God because they know what that represents. Godless atheist to crucify someone is simply another way of doing away with them.
And what are you saying here, man? Because there's a lot of stuff you're saying that's a little creepy, you know?
Like what? Yeah. This gentleman, well, what is it that you want me to say?
What do you mean atheists are... Well, go ahead, Henry. I don't mean to interrupt you,
No, you're hitting it.
What do you mean by atheists are into crucifixion?
I'm saying that if you are a Christian, it is a sacred thing to crucify someone. If you're not a Christian, to crucify someone is simply another way of putting an end to them. That's all I'm saying. So a Christian would not want to crucify somebody because that's a holy thing. So if the Christians and the atheists go to war, that's one thing that atheists have in their arsenal that Christians won't go near, and that's crucifixion.
A Christian believes that if you take somebody's life, your life shall be taken from you. That's in the Bible.
But if you crucify somebody, it is respected, isn't it?
Well,
I don't know anything about
crucified.
It.
I'm talking basically as an eye for an eye.
Okay, yeah. But isn't it holy? Isn't it considered a holy thing in the Christian faith to nail
it's
someone?
It's not
to the
a holy thing. It's not a holy
it's not.
Thing. No.
I thought that it was. Okay.
No.
My understanding. Well, what is the thing with crucifixion? Why are Christians always running around talking about crucifixion as if it's something they...
Well, when they say crucifixion, they're talking about God being crucified.
Jesus,
it's
yeah.
not going...
Yeah.
Jesus.
All right. Oh,
we're not
okay.
talking
right.
about crucifying...
I thought it was something you enjoyed, you know. I didn't know if it was something that was considered... So can you do it to people, though, if you're a Christian? Are you allowed to do that?
Are you allowed to crucify people? Is that what
yes,
you're asking?
That's my question, yeah, because I'm not familiar with the...
Well, no, that is against the law, sir.
No, I understand that, but in the Christian faith, is it considered a fast way to God, a fast track to heaven to crucify someone?
No, it's not a fast track.
It's not,
track
all right.
To God.
Okay, then I've got my facts wrong.
But boy, you sure do have your facts wrong. Hey, listen, Henry, thank you. 877-876-PHIL. No, crucifixion is something that was inflicted on Jesus of Nazareth, considered to be the personification of God.
Oh, I understand that, the Son of God.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not, he was crucified by the Romans.
Well, what is the point of everyone yammering about that? Because the reason why I'm making this point, Phil, is because the atheists, it bothers them. When the Christians go on and on about people being nailed to crosses, it sickens them.
Well, I can understand that it would sicken anybody, but in the context of the Christian faith, it is part of a miracle, which is that Jesus rose from the dead.
All right, but to get to the rising from the dead part, you've got to get to the crucifixion part, and that's the part that makes most atheists want to vomit. Do you understand what I'm trying to say to you? I'm not trying to tell you that there is anything wrong with it, but I am saying you've got to back it off because these atheists have had it. They've had it with Under God, and they've had it with In God We Trust, and they've had it with morning, noon, and night, a guy getting nailed on a wall or however they do it.
On a cross.
Well, you seem to enjoy talking about it, and that's fine.
I don't enjoy talking about it. I don't enjoy listening to somebody tell me that the atheists are about to go on the warpath because they've had it.
I'm telling you that they've had it, yes.
The atheists you've talked to.
I am in touch with a significant atheist underground, and they are ready to go, as they say, ape crap on certain people.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with Don Mix on the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Pastor William Renick will be joining us a little bit later on for an in-depth discussion on actually a demographic news story, the prediction being that there will be more people of color than there are Caucasian people by the middle of the century, that minority births, so-called, are now outnumbering white births. And Pastor Renick on to talk with us about that in a few minutes. Our number 877-876-PHIL, and of course our website, philhendryshow.com. On the line with me here is Don Mixa from University of Washington, from their engineering department. But really, we're talking about something very political, very social. You were saying, and you know, with the under God being put back in the pledge, or at least it can be put back in the pledge, it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody is going to go back to reciting the Pledge of Allegiance in schools. Nonetheless, you say atheists are really going to be pissed off. That's what you're saying.
Well, I don't know if pissed off is the word.
Well, you're talking about them having almost a physically allergic reaction.
Well, you know, Phil, in many ways.
Well, then, no, I'm being very serious now, Don. You're talking about atheists hearing the word God.
Well, in many ways, it is. You have to recognize, I think we've learned this over the centuries, we've come to recognize, for instance, that alcoholism, which we thought was a disease of character, is really a disease of a physical disease. And I think that the God is, in a way, a physical disease. We have atheists who are sickened. And by sickened, I mean there is an abundance of salivation. It is followed by a fever, sometimes followed by a rash. It can be a physical reaction that causes muscle convulsion. And this is just from hearing the word God. If you saw that film 28 Days Later, I'm not saying that that's what happens.
You mean the Rage virus?
Yeah, but that's a ridiculous movie. But if you want something that is close to the Rage virus, go up to an atheist and say, under God, under God, under God, or, you know, in God we trust, in God we trust. And you will see a physical transformation that approximates what that one guy did in the movie where he put his thumbs into the eyeballs of that woman. You know.
Well, that's a very violent thing.
Absolutely very violent, isn't it?
877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to a phone call here. This is Beth. Beth is calling us from Lexington, Massachusetts. Beth, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Don Mixa.
Hi. I'm not normally up this
yes.
late, but I'm a hospice nurse, and I'm on my way home from having sat with somebody who is dying. I'm not worried about atheists getting violent. All 6% of them can get as violent as they want. Most people in this country are Christians. And if the demographic changes the way, you know, people are saying it's going to, a large number of them are going to be Catholics. If you're offended by Christ or Christianity, you're a bigot. And I'm sure you won't run around telling the Muslims how much you hate Allah, because they would respond to you in a way that was much more violent than anything any atheist could do. You sound like you need a psychiatric evaluation, frankly. And by
well,
the way,
I would respond. I would respond to the lady by saying this: to say that 6% of the population is somehow holding back the other 94%, I think, is almost laughable. But let's go ahead and go with it. This 6% does react in a very physical way. It is not unlike a virus of some kind.
Well, maybe they're
I beg your pardon?
Maybe they're mentally ill, too. I mean, it sounds to me like you're nuts. If I don't agree with somebody, like their political point of view, I don't have a physical violent reaction. You know, I'm not Jewish, but I don't have a problem with people who are, and I don't have a problem with people who are Muslim, and I don't have a problem with people who are Buddhist or gay. And I don't have a physical reaction to people because they don't agree with me. If you do, there's something wrong with you psychiatrically, and I think you need an evaluation if you're threatening violence. And I don't think that you speak for every atheist.
Well, I didn't say that I was. I was saying atheists do. But you just a moment ago said that Muslims react violently, so I think you are bigoted toward Muslims. I think you indicated that very clearly. But let's get back to this idea that the atheist is violent, and not violent from the standpoint of just standing in line waiting to get a Starbucks coffee. I stand in line with them every Sunday morning when we have our discussions, but when you say to them, oh, by the way, under God, just to get your kicks, that's when you're dancing with the devil, as they say.
Well, what's going to happen?
Even God, even the devil, right? If you don't believe in God, then you don't believe in the devil. The other thing is, if you're an atheist, you don't believe in God, then when you die, according to you, you go nowhere. You should think those people would be much more afraid of death than Christians and Buddhists and Muslims and Jews, because they believe in an afterlife. So I don't see people getting violent who think that when they die, their life is going to come to an end, because don't think the rest of us are incapable of defending ourselves.
Well, I don't doubt that you think that you can, but can you defend yourself against someone who is going to shove his thumbs into your eyeballs? No, I don't think so.
What is that about, man? What is that about, man?
I'm trying to tell the lady that if she's standing there 1 minute ordering her cafe cubano or whatever it is she gets, and the next minute, you know, he's squeezing her skull with his... I'm just saying.
Starbucks would come and beat the trash out of him, frankly. You really think so?
You think Starbucks cares whether you live or die? I don't think so. I think what they want is the money for your cafe cubano, and that's the end of that.
Any guy who runs around threatening to poke women's eyeballs out needs to go to either a psych hospital or a jail. And that's
I'm not saying that it's me, ma'am. I'm saying that an atheist may do it to you when you keep on with this "In God We Trust" stuff. That's all I'm saying.
Don't talk about all the time.
It sounds to me, if I could just jump in, it sounds to me like you are, Don. It sounds to me you're using them as a proxy.
I don't have anything against you or this lady. I'm trying to warn you. I'm trying to warn you. The atheist is at the end of his rope.
And by the way, there's a large group of Muslims moving into this country, and they wouldn't put up with you either. You're a minority.
There you are, you're bigoted against Muslims. I thought you said you weren't bigoted. You're calling them violent.
She's saying that
being Muslim because you don't like their religion and you don't like religion. I mean, it's very brave.
I didn't say that. I said that if you were standing next to an atheist and you said to him, hey, how about that under God, and he decided to crush your skull with his hands. Is that me?
I didn't do that. I don't think that he could crush my skull with his hands quite so easily, because I know how to defend myself. And, you know,
sure.
I also think that most people
are
mentally reasonable enough so they don't walk around trying to crush people's skulls because they don't agree with their point of view.
What is that about, Don?
Well, I'm saying this because this lady, just because she got her martial arts degree at a dojo in a strip mall someplace, doesn't mean that she...
Mental instability, frankly. And I think you need a psychic. I don't think you should
be
you're just a nut.
I didn't say it. I'm saying that if they decide, believe what you want, but if you order your coffee 1 minute and you start talking to somebody about God the next and he bites your wrist, okay, like a dog, what would
then
you do?
Then he's crazy and he belongs in a mental institution.
Yeah, of course he does. Of course he does. But what do you do in the meantime?
I don't stand in line at coffee shops talking about God. I mean, religion is a personal thing.
Exactly, exactly. Although, I mean, I'm sure that at Starbucks, especially in downtown Seattle...
Well, we've got a lot of God nuts. There's a group of nuts that come... They come to my Starbucks where the atheists are, and these nuts are with God and all this.
All right. I got to take a break. I got to move on. Thank you very much, Beth, for your call, though. 877-876-PHIL. Let's move on to Nick. Nick, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Don Mixa. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, Phil. Thanks.
Yes, sir.
I myself, I'm an atheist, and before I start, I'd just like to please ask Don. He has a problem, it seems, with interrupting people when they're talking, but let me get my point
out. I just want one thing. There's a Starbucks
exactly
in downtown Seattle where they've got a lot of God people. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, now let's let this gentleman go ahead.
That's exactly what I was talking about, see. But anyway, as an atheist, I'm sure there are a lot of things me and Don can agree on, but... Coming from this atheist, I can't say that I personally...
I know atheists.
Well, whatever
I get
you
along with them.
What?
I get along with atheists. Many of them are my students. Many of them are fellow professors at the university. I get along with them very fine. I'm just trying to say that you people, are you telling me that you're not tired of hearing God every which way? Of course you are.
I'm just going to finish what I was saying because you really try to just get people off. Anyway,
no,
I can't say as an atheist that I'm on any kind of war path or that I'm about to raise any ape, you know, quote, ape crap about people talking about God or the crucifixion. Honestly, to me, and I know this is going to offend a lot of people, to me, the Bible is a piece of literature that is, you know, stuck through the ages. Irregardless, that's no reason to get offended by somebody talking about their Savior on a cross. I mean, if that's what they choose to believe in, I don't believe that anybody has a right to say boo to it, because I have my beliefs, and yes, as the lady said before, we are a minority. We're a very small minority, and we're the least accepted minority in this country right now, and being an atheist isn't easy, but that doesn't give you room to step on anybody else or tell somebody else that what they're believing in is making you sick, because as a Christian, I mean, you've got to really not judge anyone who wouldn't believe in Christianity, but from the other side of the coin,
I'm not a Christian. I'm a teacher. I'm a professor, and many of my students are atheists.
Oh, I know that you're a teacher, and I've heard all about you bringing your 18-year-old girls. You know, I'm not even going to get on that with you, because
I think you're talking about somebody else. But thank you very much for the compliment. No, but I think what I wanted to say to this young man is this: atheists, especially in the urban centers like Seattle and some of the larger cities, are not as chilled out, shall we say, as this young man is. They are ready to literally, and I mean this, begin to gnaw on people.
What do you mean literally?
What I mean by that is that they are tired of having God turned into almost a sausage-like piece of food and shoved down their throat so that they are forced to eat something that's poisonous, and they're also humiliated by how it looks.
I'm not saying that Christianity makes me feel good and like that I like to hear about it either, but all you have to do is shut your ears, get out of the damn room, and you don't got to hear anything about it. You don't have to talk about
how
something makes you queasy just because somebody's on a cross. I mean, if there is this large movement in Seattle you're talking about, I think you guys really need to sit down and just think about how it is to be...
That's a good point.
As an atheist.
I want to... Nick makes
a Christian for being a Christian.
Nick makes a good point, Don. What is it about... Is this something that's going on in Seattle, perhaps, and nowhere else?
I don't know. You gentlemen may be right. I know we have a very fervent and rabid atheist here in the Seattle area. I know that they will. The Seattle atheist will suddenly turn on you and attack you like a dog would attack you. I mean...
What do you mean, like a dog would attack me?
I mean, as if you were being attacked by a dog. Your throat.
Teeth on my throat.
Yes. Yes. Now, I don't know where this gentleman's calling from. But
I don't disagree that Christianity is shoved down everyone's throat, but when you live in a place such as America, in which Christianity is going to be the majority, it will always be the majority, you just got to suck it up and live with it, because... If you don't like it, I know they say get out, but, you know,
let
I'm
me
not
ask you a question about
either,
it, Nick,
all you
how do you tell a,
it, man.
If you saw that, you know, Mr. Henry was making a joke about that 28 days later or whatever, but how do you tell a zombie to suck it up? How do you tell a rage virus zombie to suck it up? You don't do that.
Well, we're not talking about a science fiction movie. We're talking about real life.
You're absolutely right.
I've never seen a zombie in my life, okay? So I'm not really worried about
it. Neither have I. But I will just ask you, how do you tell a zombie that eats entrails to suck it up and wait for something better to eat? I don't know how that works.
All right. I have to take a break. I appreciate your call, Nick. 877-876-PHIL. We're talking to Don Mixa. What is that? You're talking about atheists in Seattle almost as if they are... Not in control of their emotions?
No, that's not the case at all, Phil. Of course, they're some of the most intelligent, some of the most educated, some of the most lively people I know. They have great senses of humor, great card players, conversationalists, great taste in music. I have a great and intimate and loving circle of friends, and every last one of them is an atheist. But they are generous people to a fault. They have God. It's almost as if there is a metamorphosis from man to beast. And these people that are kind and generous turn into a rabid, a rabies-ridden thing. A thing. I can't explain it.
All right, hold on. 877-87. How do you go from being a very kind and gentle and generous person to a rabies-ridden thing? 877-876-PHIL. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
There's no need for an 8-year-old child to learn how to fire a machine gun unless he's living in Somalia, in which case, you know, line him up, man. The shooting range's open in Massachusetts. Famous Phil Hendry Show. Next hour, Pastor William Renick joins us. And if you want to visit us online, it's philhendryshow.com. On with the Professor of Engineering from the University of Washington, Don Mixa. I'm Phil Hendry. And Don, you mentioned the rabid atheist of Seattle, as if there is some major difference. You know these guys. You know these young men and women. They're students. You say most of them are very equanimous and normal people. But where do these people, you know, off campus, where do you find them?
Well, an awful lot of your very rabid atheists hanging out on First Hill, Capitol Hill, some in Magnolia, good chunk are in Bellevue, too. But I can tell you that they are they're good people, but like any good person, when you push them too far, and they get the taste of blood in their mouth, and obviously the majority are in the U District, too, obviously.
That would be the university?
Right, that's the university. When they smell flesh and they get the taste of blood and they get a red, bloodshot look in their eye when they hear God, they're not responsible for what they do. How could they possibly be responsible for what they do?
Let me go to another phone call here on the Phil Hendry Show. We've got Dottie on the line here in Akron, Ohio. Hi, Dottie. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Don Mixa. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm afraid your guest, being a professor, has taught his students well, hasn't he? No wonder there are so many like him, because he's a good teacher. However, all I have to say to him is...
Well, I hope I am. I hope I am.
Oh, I'm sure you are. But perhaps you don't remember that this country was founded by Christians and a belief in God. This whole country was founded...
Well, that's the propaganda, anyway.
No, that's not propaganda. But... Hey, for being a professor...
Well, we were founded by...
Being a professor.
You know, we had Native Americans that helped us at the Revolution and fight the French and the British. We had, they were not Christians. They were Indians. We had Jews.
Haven't you ever opened
Are you aware that we
book?
Had... Yes, I have, ma'am, and I happen to know we did have Jews in the very early part of the colonial period. We had Native people, very early part. We had black people. They were not certainly Christian. They were slaves from Africa. So I think you're stretching the truth a little bit.
I'm
not changing the subject at all. You're saying that the country was founded by Christians, and it wasn't.
That's right. It was. And
no,
that,
it wasn't.
Therefore, they have a right to be
I read history. I read. See,
right
this is why.
Here.
But you understand, Dottie, I think you have a right to say what you're saying, but most atheists are tired of you.
Well, I don't care how tired they are. You know something? If they don't like what goes on in this country, why don't they go to the inner parts of China or Russia? They wouldn't have
to. The inner part of China.
Dottie,
the average atheist today would pick you up and throw you off the top of a windmill or something.
So.
That's how much they think. Well, they would want to. I'm not saying they would.
Well, they might want to, but I've got a way to defend myself, too.
Well, let's not threaten people.
No, I'm not threatening. Dottie, I like Dottie, but I'm saying...
No, I'm afraid
she sounds like
I believe in God.
What would you do if you were confronted in a Starbucks by an atheist with bloodshot eyes?
I'd pull my Smith & Wesson out and let him have it.
Oh, you carry a gun?
None of your business.
Well, I guess you do, and I hope that you have a license for that, because most states there is a
license
for concealed carry.
Don't you know that this whole country now...
Well, you'd have to get it out fast enough, because you know that these atheists will hook their thumbs into your mouth, and they will try to just tear your mouth. See, atheists, this is what I mean, Phil.
Well, I don't understand. What do you mean they'd hook their thumbs into her mouth?
How do I put this? They just want to tear the whole head off.
I can't believe he teaches.
Atheists? Are you talking about this? Do you discuss this in your class?
The kids say to me, they're so tired of hearing about In God We Trust.
Tell them to leave.
They would just as soon, you know, throw someone like that off of the roof of a windmill.
Why don't they get on a boat?
Well, why don't you?
Because I love.
Why don't you? See,
I love this country.
You may. Well, atheists love the country too.
No, they don't.
You. Yes, they
no,
do.
They
just don't like you. They don't like you.
That's too bad. They just have
they
to
don't
put
like
up
you.
With it, don't they?
Why should they have to put up with you?
Well, why
should
they
have
to
put up with
you? The country was founded
because
on this.
Because you are
not.
Making them sick. You make them sick, Dottie. You
well,
see how you laugh
enough,
at that, though?
Apparently.
Don't you, you? Why do you laugh at that when you know
I
that
laugh
you make
because
sick?
It's not sick enough. Otherwise, they'd leave.
Oh, it's sick enough because they want to put their thumbs into someone's eyeball. You don't think that's sick enough?
Yeah. You're teaching
oh,
about
then it
vampires.
Is.
Phil Hendry.
Why won't you listen to me?
Visit us online at Talk Radio. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Is there any substantive reason to worry about them?
If people set out to disrupt town hall meetings to intimidate people who sincerely want to discuss...
He went further and dug his hole even deeper, burying Barack Obama, I should say, even deeper
hey,
by...
It's Tiger. I need you to do me a huge favor.
I was born of a whore and bred as an assassin.
You blew it!
World famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where reality is the bitch and through the looking glass we go each and every night here, the Alice in Wonderland of talk radio, showing you both sides of the reality. Tiger Woods has left these text messages now, and these text messages have been released, so... we're going to discuss that coming up here in this first hour with Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley, the Western Estates Homeowners Association. There's going to be a planned ceremony honoring Tiger Woods. There had been, at least, in the United States Congress, if you're ready for this, there was at least one U.S. lawmaker who had proposed awarding the golfer a congressional medal. This is not the Congressional Medal of Honor or anything like that. It must be something that they give to outstanding civilians. This was Joe Baca of California. He introduced the measure in March, and on the line with me is Bobby and Steve Dooley to talk about that. I want to just mention to you guys that you can go to our website, philhenryshow.com, and watch the video of the show, as well as listen to our show on many of our great affiliates across the country. If you're not in earshot of an affiliate, we have live streaming audio, and we have downloads the next day of the show. We also keep a five-day video archive, and you can join us at Twitter tonight and talk about the show at twitter.com/PhilHendryShow. That's Phil Hendry Show. And we're on Facebook, too, facebook.com/PhilHendry. Bobby and Steve Dooley, Western Estates Homeowners Association. Ms. Dooley, welcome to our program. Thanks for joining us.
Well, we're very grateful that you had us on, Phil, and we're very, very grateful to be able to talk about this.
It's important to you. Why? And let me just tell people, before you answer that, Bobby, that you really want to see Tiger Woods get this award because of the things that he's accomplished, even though there has been all of this news, very unflattering news lately, about him. And let me do one more thing here.
You know, Phil, a couple of things.
Can you just hold on? I want to give our number out. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. And I'm just making a note here. Go ahead, Bobby. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Tiger Woods, Phil, I think we have to look at in the context of what he has achieved. Western Estates Homeowners Association, in conjunction with other gated communities in the area, has decided to award Tiger Woods the honorary congressional medal that Representative Baca, at the end of the day, really didn't have the moral courage to at least try to propose to the United States Congress. The reason why we feel that we're very honored to award him with this honorary congressional award can be summed up really in this very simple statement. 1997, the Masters, he wins by 9 shots. In the year 2000, he won the U.S. Open. In the year 2000, he also won the Open Championship.
Ms. Dooley, we know all of his accomplishments.
If I could just finish my statement, Phil.
All right, but we know his accomplishments.
Well, no, I don't think we do. I don't think people really know who this man is. In 2001, he won the Masters. He won it again in 2002. He won the U.S. Open in 2002. In 2005, the Masters again.
Again.
In 2006, he won the Open Championship.
If I go online, I can see all of these accomplishments.
You can see all of the accomplishments, Phil, if you're curious enough. But if you don't really know Tiger Woods, then you don't really understand the man, and you only get one side of the man. I just wanted to bring up one other thing. Tiger Woods, in 1997, was the number one earner on the PGA Tour. He held that position, with the exception of 2 years, all the way through 2007. In 2008, he was number two. And again, this year, he was number one. There are so many other areas that we can explore having to do with Tiger Woods and what he has accomplished, yes, not just as a young golfer, but yes, as a black golfer. And we're very, very honored on Saturday to be able to present to him this honorary congressional medal that we hope he will accept in the spirit that it is given.
Now, I want to ask something. Is Mr. Woods coming to your ceremony?
We are very hopeful that he will.
But you have no confirmation of him coming to your ceremony?
We don't want to comment on that right now.
All right. Let me ask you this. You're calling this an honorary congressional medal. Is it not the congressional medal, then? This is an honorary congressional medal.
It is the honorary version of the congressional medal that would have been given to him had Representative Baca had the moral, I think the moral courage.
You really got the moral courage, Mr. Manner.
And I think just the basic courage to say, you know, we have to recognize even when a man is, you know, allegedly involved in some things.
Well, it's not alleged. These are affairs and text messages,
mm-hmm.
Dalliances with other women.
And it is unfortunate. And I don't want you to think that, you know, our hearts and our prayers don't go out to Tiger. And it's unfortunate. We don't really see where it has anything to do with the man. You can look at the PGA wins, over 70 of them. There's no other golfer in the history of the sport that has achieved what he's achieved in the time that he achieved it. 38 European Tour wins, 2 Japan, Jap Tour wins.
It's not called the Jap, is it called the Jap Tour?
It's the Japan Tour, I think.
Yeah.
It's the Japan Tour, I'm sorry, Phil. Asian Tour wins, 1. The PGA Tour of Australasia, 1.
But again, okay, so I'm not, if you want to give him this award, that's fine.
Well, we didn't really accept your invitation to be on the program because we wanted to argue about this. We are simply letting people know that Tiger Woods will be presented with this award, and if they don't understand that, we can certainly bring up the name of O.J. Simpson. Are you going to deny that O.J. Simpson won the Heisman Trophy?
I am not going to deny that, no.
Then you cannot deny that he was drafted number one by the Buffalo Bills. He was the first man to break 2,000 yards in a season, breaking the single-season rushing record of Jim Brown. You cannot deny the greatness of O.J. Simpson. And I think people will understand that in that context.
Well, I think you brought up the wrong name, to be honest with you.
Really, what?
I think that the name O.J. Simpson is typical of the name of someone who people don't like and would not care about his accomplishments.
Well, you know what? I think that's a matter of argument. I don't agree with that. If you don't like that name, Roman Polanski, are you going to tell me that he didn't make Rosemary's Baby, that he didn't make Chinatown? The point that I'm trying to make here is very simple. There comes a time in certain people's lives that they have achieved so much. It really doesn't matter what they've done. It is so outstanding. It is so beyond what any of us could do.
Yeah, this is really the point of it, Mr. Henry, of what he did.
There comes a time in certain people's lives that they have been able to scale heights that you and I will never reach, that they have been able to win victories and become victorious in battles that you and I might run in fear from. And these are so profound that it just doesn't matter anymore.
It really doesn't.
It doesn't matter anymore what a man does.
You're telling me that in the case of an O.J. Simpson, for instance, who is alleged to have, and frankly, all the evidence points to the fact that he committed cold-blooded murder in two people, that his achievements outweigh that.
I am not saying that it was not a very tragic instance for Mr. Simpson. It was a low point for him. What I am saying is his achievements have been so outstanding.
What, I'd like to ask you a question.
If you let me finish, his achievements have been so outstanding. O.J. killed in his private life. Let's remember that.
Yeah, because of the privacy of it, Mr. Henry. And
Steve and I were talking about this, Phil, that this was O.J.'s... This is his personal life. And the fact that he committed homicide in his private life, not his professional athletic career... In other words, what it's saying...
No. This is not his private life. The murder that he committed...
No, what I am saying, Phil...
The murder that he committed is very, very public. Very, very public. Because it involves the police, and it involves us as taxpayers. It involves us as concerned citizens when we see the law violated in such a way.
What I am saying, if you'll let me finish, because you're missing my point, this was done in his private time, is what I'm saying. It was not done... Professionally, it was not something that he's known for. This is not any of your business other than the police, yes. And
no, it is my business as a taxpayer.
But it has nothing to do with, and it really doesn't rise up to the level of the things he's achieved. Let's talk about Roman Polanski for a minute.
Well, I disagree.
Let's talk about Roman. I know you disagree. Let's talk about Roman Polanski. Roman Polanski made some of the most beautiful films that have ever been made. Did he molest a child? I don't know. They say he did. But do you realize that what Roman Polanski was able to achieve in his life, to escape the Germans, to escape the Nazis, to make Rosemary's Baby and Chinatown, maybe the two greatest films ever made? Yes, there is a point where you have to say, even child molestation has to be put into some context.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't agree with that.
You have to put it into some context, Phil.
I mean, I know that Roman Polanski is a great film director, and I'll give you that. And I like his movies, and I've watched a lot of his movies.
Phil, you have to put this into context. Why should a molestation or a rape charge that was done 40 or 50, I don't even know how long ago it was.
It was 30 years ago.
All right. Same difference, you know.
No, not the same difference. This woman is in her 40s now that was molested.
All right. So, in other words, she's older than me. And I don't want to say get over it, and I won't say get over it.
No, I don't think you should.
But I will tell you this. That young woman, where she's sitting in front of me right now, I would say to her, you know what? It's Roman Polanski. Look at what he's done. And I know that if someone sat down with her and said, it was Roman Polanski, my God, I bet you if she thought about it, she would probably think, you know, that is pretty, pretty interesting. It's pretty good. Not so much that I was molested, but my molestation doesn't really register, you know?
Yeah, it's like a seismograph, Mr. Henry. If you molest a kid, yeah, okay, it's bad. Is it a register on a seismograph? No. But a movie, do.
The things that he did, those do register.
So Tiger Woods, what he did in his professional life, okay.
But sir, your audience really doesn't care what these celebrities do in their private lives. I mean, it's fodder for conversation, but what we remember more than anything else are their achievements. Kobe Bryant, another case in point. He is alleged to have bent a woman over a chair and humiliated her by holding her hair, bending her over a chair.
Yeah, I know what he's charged with having done.
Does anybody remember that? No. What they do remember, though, is Kobe leading the Los Angeles Laker to its victory. And that is what people remember.
Well, I think personally, I think it's unfortunate people don't remember what Kobe Bryant did. I remember making a big deal out of it at the time and everybody telling me that I was crazy, big wow. Anyway, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Bobby and Steve Dooley on to talk about a Tiger Woods, and really, his achievements are so immense, his achievements are so historic, that there comes a point when it really doesn't matter what a man of great achievement does in his private life, because all eyes are on the great achievements. And we were just got done talking about Kobe Bryant and Roman Polanski. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back here with Bobby and Steve Dooley on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Very weird.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Phil Henry.
Lame. Oh, yeah, you're lame. Nothing like those cats. They're lame. They're lame. Oh, God, they need a life. They're lame. 9/11 truthers suck. Blow it out your butt. All right, I copyright that idea right now.
Phil Henry Show.
You're not getting it at all.
I am getting it, and I'm talking off the air.
Phil, you don't understand. Let me tell you something about that comic.
All right, we can talk about, we were talking off the air. We're back with Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley here. We're on the air now, Ms. Dooley. We can talk about it, and you brought up the name of Fatty Arbuckle, who was the famous comic in the 20s, who was convicted of raping and basically manslaughter, killing a girl in San Francisco. Do you find that excusable?
I do not find it. What I am saying is, do you understand that Fatty Arbuckle would have been as popular and as pivotal as Charlie Chaplin? America would have had its answer to Chaplin, but instead, Fatty Arbuckle is remembered for a party. Okay?
No, not a party. A party that in which a girl was killed when he raped her. Okay?
I understand that. How many times are you going to say that? That does not deny the brilliance of his work.
Well, I don't know Fatty Arbuckle's work, and I'm sort of happy that I don't, because, frankly, what he did makes me, sick. Here is Jerron in Tennessee. Jerron, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Bobby and Steve Dooley. Go ahead, please.
Hey, thanks, Phil. I got a
yes,
question
sir.
For you, Bobby Boo. What, do you have children?
You know something, you can talk to me with respect or not at all. You understand
okay.
What I mean?
Sorry, Bobby. Do you have children?
Do you want me to make fun of your name, which is a very unusual name?
Hey, I get that a lot, but can you answer my question? Do you have children?
Right. Well, let's start all over again. What do you want?
All right. Bobby, thank you for talking to me. Do you have children?
Yes, I do.
Now, if I was to be of some professional greatness and have scaled a great height of proportions
which,
that no one else has ever achieved, and
which is highly doubtful,
your children, am I excused for that? Am I excused because of what I've created?
Well, first of all, Jerron, It's highly unlikely, having just spoken to you over the last 60 seconds, that you would ever achieve anything like that. So it's difficult for me to imagine that. But let's say, for instance, it was someone who is really famous.
Okay.
I would say the following thing. My children are taught not to get into those situations. So what you're bringing up is simply something that couldn't happen.
No. That's not fair. That's not fair.
But why isn't that fair?
The man asked you if, you know, it's a hypothetical.
It doesn't make any sense. My children would never be involved in a situation like that.
All right, let's say my children then. Let's say my children were raped and killed by some famous guy who happened to go crazy one weekend or whatever the hell it was, and he decides to take it out of my kids. What do you think?
I would say I would be there with you every step of the way, Phil. I would be at your home. I would be helping your family. I would do anything that I could. I would say I would feel very great sympathy.
No, what do you think of the famous person that would rape and otherwise brutalize my children? What do you think of that person? Do they still deserve our recognition?
I'm telling you that I would sit down with you while you were in despairing and explain to you why I would still admire that person. I know that you'd understand. And
you know that I would understand why?
Because at that moment, you would realize when I told you. See, right now, Phil, you don't have that emotional stake. My kids would never go out with that. I mean, the gentleman's question, my children are not going to go out with Fatty Arbuckle. What does that mean? So they don't have to worry about being raped.
He wasn't talking about Fatty Arbuckle. He was saying any famous person. All right, we're going to be back with Bobby Dooley. Hold the line here. As she talks about man's achievements. Some men's achievements are so great that it doesn't matter what they do in their lives. And she includes in that group Tiger Woods, who she and her homeowners association plan on giving an award to this weekend. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back on the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
They call it that.
I guarantee you they don't.
Well, the point is, Phil, 71 PGA Tour wins.
All right, well, we're back with Bobby and Steve Dooley here on the Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, as we talk about Tiger Woods and this award you're going to give him. This is a honorary congressional award. This was the award that this Joe Baca wanted to give, but apparently he's not going to give it. You guys are going to give it a congressional award. You're not the Congress.
It is honorary, Phil. It is not the actual award. It is honorary.
Yeah, it's an honorary award for Tiger Woods.
Yeah, Phil, you're missing the point. It's an award that really should be given to Tiger Woods, and I've given you the reason. We're talking about 71 PGA Tour wins. We're talking about this Jap Tour.
It's not called the Jap Tour. You know, that is considered to be an ethnic slur.
My information is that's what the golfers call it, okay?
I know, Mr. Henry, I'm sorry, but I know a lot of Russian golfers, and they call it that.
Well, I don't care what they call it in the privacy of the locker room or when they're talking to each other. They're going to say whatever they're going to say on my show. We're not going to call it that.
Well, he won one of those events. And
all right, I know his credentials.
And so I am saying to you, and I am trying to get through to you, that there comes a point where you have to go, hello, oh my God, this man has transcended all of us. In what he's achieved, we don't hold these people to the same standard. My God.
I don't even get it.
Well, maybe I don't get it, Ms. Dooley. To me, I've always believed we hold them to the same standard. That's the reason. Let's go to a phone call. Ellen, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Bobby and Steve Dooley here. We're talking about Tiger Woods and his accomplishments as opposed to his private life. Go ahead, ma'am.
Well, I don't understand why she keeps mm-hmm. trying to jam down all his mm-hmm. accolades, as if America mm-hmm. in this country doesn't mm-hmm. know about Tiger Woods' accolades and that he's mm-hmm. a great golfer. Mm-hmm.
Well, did you?
We're talking to everybody like we're all complete idiots. And
did you know that he was number one
here.
On the money list?
I don't understand where you're coming from, and you think you could just sit people down
mm-hmm.
and force
mm-hmm.
it on them. And you keep saying mm-hmm. you're missing the point. You've not made one point.
Mm-hmm. I made the point with Roman Polanski.
Why are you talking about him?
Because he has made great films.
Yes,
and
I
he's
know,
been
but
persecuted.
You sound like you need professional help. You're not making an argument.
You're making an insult. Yes, you are.
Excuse me. The prior caller.
Hold on.
One question: if you had children and you insulted him.
He started out by calling me Bobby Boo. That's the wrong foot to get off on with me. Does anybody call you a nickname that you don't know? I don't think so. So let's talk about, do you have children?
I want to understand you on this program.
You have not made a point
to help us understand where you're coming from.
Bobby, let me ask this question. Bobby, will you say that you brought up Roman Polanski? Okay, he's made great movies.
And I'll bet you anything that this woman has gone to see a Roman Polanski movie, even as he has been a fugitive from justice for child molestation.
Thank you.
Oh, right. Are you telling me you've never seen a Roman Polanski film?
I probably have not.
That's not a no.
That's
not a no. It's unfair to judge a celebrity.
You'd have to name one. I don't even know who this is.
Rosemary's Baby. Rosemary's Baby. Rosemary's Baby. Rosemary's Baby. Rosemary's Baby. You've never seen that?
I have not seen Rosemary's Baby.
What a lying.
Hey.
I'm not a liar.
Watch it. Hey.
I've got it.
I don't know who they are.
Tell that husband of yours to watch his mouth, okay?
The Pianist, Chinatown, The Ninth Gate. You've never seen these films. I think it's really dishonest of you to sit there and tell me that you haven't.
All right, let's just go on the assumption the lady hasn't seen those movies. What is your point?
I know of the
point
Pianist,
is,
but I've not seen the other two movies.
Bobby, what is your point then?
The point is this: that this man has given us so much joy that it no longer matters what they do in their private life.
How can all that overshadow when someone does something?
Why do you care? Why do you care that it does? Why do you care that it does? I mean, I don't get you at all. Wow.
You're asking.
What's not to get? The fact is,
you're the one that's got the problem. You're the one that's got.
I don't have a problem.
You got a problem with Tiger Woods or Tiger Polanski, or I mean Tiger. Roman,
I think that you're on something.
You know what's really interesting? You haven't made a point.
I have called up, and
you've called me crazy.
I didn't even want to go on the air if you really need to
what
know
is your
the
point?
Truth.
Well, then why do we have you on the air? Wait. Why do we have you on the air? I don't understand that.
This woman is... You violated the law by going on the air then when you weren't supposed to.
No, she hasn't.
I have not.
No, she hasn't.
I was trying to explain that listening to you, you have not made your point. And you can't just...
How many different times do you want me to say this?
I could take you down if your child was murdered or raped.
Exactly.
And then
Let's say your daughter was raped by Roman Polanski. I would feel horrible. I would go to your home. I would console you. You know, you want me to make a point, but you won't shut your bean town pie hole, please?
Oh, Ms. Dooley, you don't need to start getting into the insults here.
This woman hasn't shut that bean hole of hers.
All right. No, I'm talking to Bobby, Ellen, and the fact is that, Bobby, whatever point it is you're trying to make, you haven't made, the lady's trying to say. Hold on for a minute, Ellen.
Yeah.
You're saying that...
See how Ellen won't even shut up? You even have to tell her to shut up.
I'm not telling her to shut up, no. I'm saying that you, Bobby, are saying that it is unfair to judge a celebrity by what they do in their private lives because they contribute way too much to society on screen or on the field and that they're different from us.
Yes, that has been the point that I have been making all along, but this lady from Beantown wouldn't zip the bean hole long enough to let me say it.
I won't shut my pie hole, did she say, long enough?
I said beanhole. It was a play on words. Bean as in Beantown?
Well, I have
reminded
Bobby to try to understand your point, but you've not made a point from what I've been listening
well,
to.
Well, just because you say that, then at some point I have to say the fact. You must be stupid. Because I've made the point a dozen times.
Oh, okay.
So you must be really dumb. Yeah, uh-huh.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I just left the hospital where I work. I don't think my co-working nurses think that I'm stupid.
Well,
I mean,
your
I can't believe that
I don't know.
And
can you tell
me? Multiple times.
Yes, exactly. You've insulted me. And by the way, how much intelligence does it
take?
Oh, yes, you have. You said you said I'm on drugs. You said I'm on drugs.
You're somebody that's under the influence.
That's an insult. And just because you rinse out bedpans doesn't mean that you're a pharmacologist.
I don't rinse out bedpans. I never.
3 points. 3 points. 3 points from the edge of the circle. Oh,
that's great.
All right, now we're getting into a childish. Give and take here about who's scoring the best points. It's ridiculous.
No,
she's a nurse.
No, no. Well, I scored a three-pointer from the arc. Are you kidding me when you said that you were a nurse and I said that you clean out bedpans and you went, you don't get that?
Okay, good for you, Bobby. That's what you did. All right, Ellen, thank you so much for your call. 877-876-PHIL. Are you hearing what the people are saying? They're saying that no matter what, if someone does something so egregious, it has to affect our view of them.
And I am saying these people are so far above us, how can we judge them? God.
You listen to what my wife's saying, Mr. Henry?
I'm listening to what your wife is saying. So in other words, they're so high above us, Roman Polanski, Tiger Woods, who else?
Richard Nixon. Do you know who he was, right? He was the president of the United States. They said he was a liar. They said he was a lawbreaker. And yet today, he is revered as one of the great foreign policy statesmen of our times, Richard Milhouse Nixon. Are we going to forget all of the wonderful things he did because of something else? No. Let's talk a little bit now about Michael Vick, a great football player. A dog died. Big whoop. And
big whoop? There's people that love animals. I happen to be one of them, you know, and what he did to those animals, I couldn't care less whether the guy threw 50 touchdown passes in a season. Melissa, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Bobby and Steve Dooley. Go ahead.
Hi.
Well, I think you're lying, Mr. Hendry.
You think I'm lying about Michael Vick?
Yes.
I'm telling you right now, if Michael Vick threw 50 touchdown passes a year, I could not care.
You're lying.
Okay, fine. I'm lying. Go ahead, Melissa.
Okay, I was just kind of misunderstanding why you're comparing Tiger Woods and Roman Polanski. I believe what's going on with Tiger Woods is like a personal issue between him and his wife. And I personally.
Well, and the same thing with Roman Polanski. It was private between him and the 13-year-old.
Right,
what?
Yeah, that's kind of disgusting. I mean, I think there's a big difference between what
don't
Tiger's
you think it's,
doing and...
Don't you think it's private?
You know, this lady's making a good point. Thank you, Melissa.
No,
what Tiger Woods is doing is not illegal.
You're going to rape a child, a 13-year-old drunker and raper? No,
I understand that, but don't you think it's between those two people?
No, it's not. She's a minor.
No. Uh-uh. I do not.
All right.
As a parent, so, no.
Do you know who Phil Spector was?
Yeah, this is a good one,
yeah.
Phil Spector.
Phil Spector created the Wall of Sound. We wouldn't have Tina Turner today. We wouldn't have, you know, Do-Do Run Run and all of that music. He shot a woman in the foyer of his home. So now I'm supposed to take all my Phil Spector records and throw them down a well. Well, this isn't 17th century Salem. Thank you.
How you can compare
wait a minute. They broke the law.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Those men, you respect, even though they broke the law. Tiger didn't break the law, but you don't respect him.
Well.
Tiger?
Yeah, gotcha.
Oh, yeah. Score it again.
Between him and his wife. I mean.
Well, all right. Maybe Melissa is not. Melissa, you're taking Tiger's side, right? You feel that they're making a big deal out of nothing? Is that it?
Well, then she agrees.
I really don't care.
Okay.
Well, then you agree with what I'm saying. I'm saying that Tiger Woods, let's say that he transmitted AIDS to one of these women, which God forbid he would ever do. I still think he's entitled to our respect and our admiration. That's all I'm saying.
Not on a moral level, no.
Hello?
No.
I think that you're very young. You're very young, and you haven't seen a lot of the world that I've seen. There may come a day in your life, Melissa, where you will thank God that a man's even spending 5 minutes.
I think there's a lot of the world that you haven't seen, and you need to go out there and maybe experience.
There's going to be a time in your life where you'll drop to your knees and thank God that a man's buying you a beer. And those are the times that you'll remember. Absolutely. And so these 11 women are, in a lot of ways, they're blessed. In a lot of ways, they're cursed because they're white. He's black. You know the prejudice in our society.
Well, what are we talking about now?
Yeah, I'm confused.
I was telling her about Phil Spector and how
Phil Spector took a gun, shot a woman through the head. Okay, your point is?
Whatever.
No, not whatever. Phil Spector took a gun, shot a woman through the head. It ain't whatever. So what's your opinion of that?
My opinion of that is that I feel bad for Phil. And
you know, when I brought up O.J. Simpson, you said you felt bad for O.J. You feel bad for Michael Vick. What about the people that they shot or that they killed?
Michael Vick didn't kill a people. It was a dog.
You know, a dog and a human?
Yes, I know, and I didn't bring... I'm saying, what about the act?
What about the act, Phil? You know, people die. Do you remember 9/11? And everyone saying 3,000 people, 3,000 people. Do you know more people die on the highways every day?
Oh, you know what? You're going to drive me nuts with this babbling about more people die on the highways. Bobby and Steve Dooley with us. Our number 877-876-PHIL. As we talk about Tiger Woods... And it doesn't matter what he did, it doesn't matter what he might do, it doesn't matter what crime he committed, it doesn't matter what despicable act anyone commits, if they are famous enough and they have achieved so many things, they're in a different category from us. We're judged differently from them. When we come back, I'll ask Bobby if she thinks that we should invent an entire new legal code for famous people. 877-876-PHIL, World Famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
I got you so good with that.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
You got you, Mr. Hendry. Who did Michael Vick kill?
World Famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Welcome back here to the world famous and groundbreaking Phil Hendry Show. Bobby and Steve Dooley have joined us to talk about the Tiger Woods episode, the affair as it continues now, and the discussion here on this honorary congressional medal of honor that you're going to give him because you feel that he just transcends the rest of us.
Well, you know, Phil, you put it in a way that really mocks the rest of us. I'm not trying to mock us. I'm trying to say that Tiger Woods, let me say it again. And I would really appreciate it if you wouldn't interrupt me, because this is so important. PGA Tour career summary.
Oh, come on, Bobby. I can...
No, excuse me. He won. I don't know how many majors. He was the number one money earner. I've got all these things here.
Well, you're confusing my wife.
The point is, Phil, the day you go out and win two majors in a row, then we'll talk about some of the filth, quote-unquote, that you've been digging into.
Well, I'm happy to tell you that I haven't been digging into any, so you won't have to do any investigation, okay?
Well, we'll let the Times decide that. Thank you.
No, you don't need to do that. I haven't been involved in any of that. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Jackie in Tucson. Jackie, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Bobby and Steve Dooley.
We'll let the Times decide that.
Yes, ma'am.
I need to address this nurse. As a nurse...
I'm not a nurse.
You said that you were a nurse earlier.
No, the last caller was a nurse.
What is your profession then, ma'am?
I'm a homemaker and a mother.
You're a homemaker and a mother. Okay, you are a disgrace to mothers everywhere then, because you're saying that Tiger was...
Oh, I see. And are you qualified to speak on motherhood?
I'm a teacher. I'm a certified teacher.
Do you have children? Do you have children?
Yes, I do.
You have children?
Yes, I do. I am a mother.
Well,
you're also a teacher and a mother.
So do you have time for your children?
Let the woman say what she wants to say, please.
Please let me
go ahead.
My comment.
Go ahead, Jackie.
You are very, very sick in the head. You are excusing this man's behavior for involving himself with at least 11 women while he's married. And it's only 11 that have come forward. I guarantee you.
Did it hurt you? Did it hurt you? Did it hurt you? No.
Please let me finish.
It didn't hurt you. It didn't hurt you.
Let the woman finish. Bobby, you're very rude jumping in like that. Let her finish.
Well, she's saying nonsensical things.
My name is Jacqueline. Thank you.
Just because she's a teacher.
I can't. Bill, you see what you're dealing with.
Bobby, hold on. No, Jackie, go ahead. I'm going to put her on hold. Go ahead.
Okay. When the callers address
I broke up on
the issue, a 13-year-old has no legal right to consent to sexual activity with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
A 13-year-old child is raped by Roman Polanski, and you're saying as a 50-year-old she needs to let it go?
Mm-hmm.
You are sick.
Mm-hmm.
You are absolutely sick. Child rape carries on a horrible legacy.
Yes.
And you don't know that because you've never experienced it.
Yes.
And you need to
Because I'm a child advocate
since 1991.
Well, how do you know what my life has been? What do you know about my life? What do you know what I've been through?
Excuse you? I haven't been in court in Nebraska, Texas, California,
What do you know about my... No, but you said I haven't been through this. How
you
do you know what I've been through?
You not know what you are speaking of, ma'am. And you need to not...
Well, I can tell you this.
Because when I find out where you're giving this award...
I agree with you. I agree with you, except in the case of Tiger Woods.
The state that you live in, I will write to your governor, I will write to your attorney general's office, and you will be investigated for your promulgation of illicit and illegal activity. Because
they're going to take your litter and throw it in the garbage can.
You're married to a pedophile. I'll bet you anything. You're married to
one. They'll probably throw your letter in the garbage. The governor is going to throw your letter in the garbage.
Because you're married to a pedophile. You should just admit it and hang up.
Well, so are you. So are you. So what difference does it make?
Who am I married to?
Sorry. Yeah, but isn't his name Pete File?
Who am I married to?
I'm joking.
Now,
who are you married to? What are you married to?
It's none of your business.
Oh. Well, so he has a long criminal history.
I have a DOJ clearance, ma'am.
Right.
A Department of Justice clearance, a 10-point roll, and a DPS card in the state of Texas, and lifetime certification.
Mm-hmm.
So you know not what you are speaking of, and you need to quit and hang up now.
You have a BFD? What did she say?
BFD? Are you making fun of me? I have a BFD?
No, you said you have a BFD in something.
No, I said I have a Bachelor of Science in Education, and I'm a child advocate.
No, you didn't. No, you said you
had
a BFD.
I have a Department of Justice clearance on my
Phil
Hendry.
Uh-huh.
Visit us online at talkradionetwork.com.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Oh, it's kind of a dog-eat-dog world out there.
Sometimes you get nervous if they get, like...
I'm gay myself, and I grew up in Pleasant Plains, and I know what it's like to...
For you, lots of money.
Say, baby, put down that pipe and get my pipe up.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about every night till, till the sun goes down. Well, actually, well past the sun going down. In fact, the sun's down when we come on the air here. Our website is philhendryshow.com. I don't know what I was saying there. Our website, philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. So visit us, watch our live streaming video, look at the drama behind the scenes as well as the drama on the scene. And if you're lucky, you'll catch one of those nights where I'm going ballistic. And if you're lucky. Anyway, 877-876-PHIL. The creator of Mike and Molly calls the Marie Claire blogger hateful. We'll have Father James McCorders on the line with us here from Belmar Academy in just a moment to discuss the Mike and Molly situation. The whole controversy about... If there is a controversy, I never know whether these things are so manufactured. Do we really care if someone is overweight and they happen to be kissing another overweight person. Is this an issue, or did somebody from this magazine turn it into a phony baloney? Anyway, that'll be Father James McQuarters on to talk about that with us. Our affiliate spotlight tonight, Dallas-Fort Worth, KFXR 1190 AM, and in Redding, California, KCNR 1460 AM. Two great stations on the Phil Henry Show network. So, what do we got here? Mike and Molly, they're going to do an episode, as a matter of fact, folks, that has just been announced based upon this Marie Claire issue, and it will be revolving around, I guess, one of them, canceling a subscription after a controversial Marie Claire column was written about Mike and Molly. Its creator vowed to incorporate the experience into a storyline on the CBS show. So Mark Roberts, who himself battled weight issues, told Fancast.com that Marie Claire blogger Maura Kelly's post seemed like something someone would say when they're really drunk at a party with their other hateful friends. Father James McQuarters is with us. And Father McQuarters, I know you've worked with overweight teens, as well as being a member of the San Gabriel Valley Diversity Council. And weight issues are part of that, right?
Well, they are part of it, too. Especially when you're talking about young people who have so many other issues, you know, that they have to deal with. And for a young person to not only be struggling with these issues of adolescence, whatever they may be, to also be struggling with their own physical maladies and weakness, whether it's a weight issue or other issues, it's terribly troubling. It's terribly debilitating. And we talk with them and try to find ways for them to cope with this, and as well as to interact with the rest of society in a positive way.
Now, let me play for you just, this is just a TV clip from the Mike and Molly show to give our listeners and myself and yourself, Father, an idea what the show's like.
And for you, lads, man, one plain wiener, no bun, no sauerkraut, no chili, no mustard, no pickle, no cheese, no relish.
No tip, give it to me.
Excuse me to inquire. Well, this meager meal seems insufficient for a man of your tremendous girth.
I'm just trying to drop a couple of pounds.
May I suggest you move to my country, where everyone is fashionably thin due to lack of food?
Well, there you go. That is from the Mike and Molly show. We have with us Father James McQuarters. So the show's about a couple of overweight people who are in love. They show physical attraction to each other and physical affection. And it was the Maura Kelly column, which said that we don't want to look at fat people, that sparked this outrage and this backlash. And now I think that this writer has been forced to apologize, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, it's not my place, I don't think, to comment on whatever the policy was for her magazine. I'm not familiar with it. I will say that I heard her criticism, and I've also heard the criticism of others, as you have. But I think there are places and there are times for these criticisms. And this woman writing what she wrote, which was, I take it, a criticism of how disgusting, I guess, was the word she used, it is to see fat people kissing, if I'm not mistaken.
That's essentially it, Father, yeah.
It's not the time or the place to say this. I think it is probably a truism to say that there are very few of us that would disagree with that. I think it's a truism to say that there are very few of us that want to sit in a restaurant and look at two of these people that are of this physical size, of this physical shape that these people are in. No one really wants to look at two of those people kissing or doing the things that they do, but you can't say these things in public the way this woman did and hope for any sympathy at all.
Well, you work with overweight kids. Are you saying that it's disgusting to see overweight kids hugging each other, or?
Well, I'm saying that in the public arena, this writer is saying we don't want to see fat people hugging and kissing. Well, ladies, I don't think there's any doubt that she's right, but I don't think you say that in the way that she said it. Now, in working with overweight teens, and we have our dances, we have the dance for the teen. Some of these children who are not physically attractive, we have a dance for them. And we have areas of the dance floor at the regular dances, the regular teen dances we have for high school, that we hang some kind of a sheet or some kind of a barrier separation where these children can go and they can dance. Because we recognize that while these children are overweight and deserve to have a good life, no one wants to look at it and no one wants to see it. So that's what we do to try to make their lives better. But you don't come out in the open as this Kelly. And I believe it's
her name's Maura Kelly.
This Maura Kelly woman did. And say, I'm disgusted by looking at fats, kissing and hugging and so forth. I don't think there's any doubt that you're going to find people disagreeing with that. But you don't ever make the issue in public where you denigrate people in public like that. And you segregate, for instance...
You are segregating the fat kids from the skinny kids at the dance? You think that's going to help them deal with their weight issues?
Well, I don't know, Bill, but you do have to create a comfortable atmosphere for both, the skinny ones and the fat ones. I don't know. What helps them with their weight issues is to recognize one-on-one. And when we sit down with the kids, we say to them, well, you know, the first thing I want to say to you is, if you're hugging and kissing in public, and you're dancing, you know it's going to disturb a great many people. And so we want you to be mindful of that. And then we can get to your weight issue. But before we get to your weight issue, we've got to draw some ground rules here, and we've got to make you aware of something. If you're out in the public and you're kissing and hugging and rubbing, you're going to make people sick. And you have to understand, no way. You can't do it. You know, you don't want these fat kids running the events for the skinny and the... And we have to totally be honest with these big ones about the other people and their feelings around them. And I think you mentioned something like that once, Phil.
I did. Let me give her now. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. What did I say?
You told me that you had been on a Disney cruise with your wife and your children, and you saw two very big women dancing with a little skinny man.
I said I saw...
they were fat women, weren't they?
Well, they weren't obese.
No, but they were fat women. They were big women, weren't they?
They were big women, yeah.
And they had taken this small man, a skinny man, I think you said.
Well, he wasn't skinny. I mean, he was probably a fit guy. He was a little guy. I think he might have been the husband.
And did you see how you almost said wife? You see how it's an emasculating...
No. I meant to say husband. He might have been...
But it's an emasculating thing to be a small, thin man and to be told to go out onto a dance floor. And I'll see you out there. And you know what's going to greet you when you get out there. And that's the big wife. And when you said that to me that night, Phil, my heart sunk for that man. And yet I knew that there was no way you could talk about it on the radio. Tonight, I think we had to come clean with it.
Well, I don't know that there's anything to come clean with. I said to you at that time when I was talking to you, I saw these two large women dancing. You know, it's a funny thing about the Disney crew. We took the kids on this cruise, and...
Well, I don't... If you could get to the essential, because... I don't want people to lose interest if you're going to tell us your life story. If you can...
I'm not giving them my life story. I'm just saying when you go on something like a Disney cruise, and they have stuff for kids, and they have stuff for adults, and they have nightclubs on this ship for adults. So the reason why I'm saying all of this is I think that some people just loosen up a little bit, and these were two big, you know, women.
But they were fat women. You see how your instinct is healthy. Your instinct is to not say anything about it. Your instinct is to keep your mouth shut and to not say, these two fat women made me sick to look at. And
well, they did not make me sick to look at.
No, you are not going to say that. But the fact that you said you saw them dancing with a little skinny man, a little tiny man, and a man perhaps with no future, perhaps no past. He might have been married to one of the women. He might have not have been married. I don't know. A little tiny man. A little man who might have made a big life for himself. Another man has been taken out of the dance floor by a big woman. What future does a little man have?
All I'm saying is I think that he probably was the husband of one of these ladies, and it was amusing to me. It wasn't sickening. It wasn't any of those things. It was amusing to me, Father, to see this little guy dancing with these two big women. It made me laugh, but I was not sickened by that, okay?
I'll tell you, Phil, the obese children that we work with, I counsel them, and I think they appreciate my honesty with them when we're in private. I tell them they're fat, that they make people physically ill when they show any sort of affection in public. But these fat kids say, thank you for the honesty, Father. And I think it gives them the motivation. But you don't come out in public and say, I went on a Disney cruise, I saw a little tiny man. He went out of the dance floor with two big women. And the next thing I saw was the little man, he was squished between the two fat, you know. You didn't. I know you didn't.
I wouldn't say that because that didn't happen.
But that's the instinct.
No, I don't think so. Well, let me tell you, our 877-876-PHIL. Father James McQuarters has joined us. The instinct to say that looking at fat people having affection for each other does make us ill. Most of us don't say it in public. What Maura Kelly said in her blog, according to Father McQuarters, is pretty much how people feel. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. So does watching large people have affection for each other make you sick? Is Father McQuarters reflecting a view that's held by a lot of people, or is he a little bit off base on this thing? We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show as we talk about Mike and Molly and Maura Kelly.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back, 877-876-PHIL, here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Father James McQuarters from Belmar Academy joining us. The Mike and Molly episode, well, not the Mike and Molly episode, the Mike and Molly show, was the subject of a column by Maura Kelly in this Marie Claire website magazine. In it, she said that she'd received a lot of complaints and that CBS had received a lot of complaints about looking at fat people on TV, kissing, hugging, having physical affection, and that she herself found it gross. Joining me is Father James McQuarters. You don't necessarily disagree yourself. You're saying that it was going public with it.
Well, you don't go public with something like that. The essential point that must be made is that I don't think Maura Kelly needs to remind anyone. She certainly doesn't need to remind the people at CBS. And she doesn't need to remind myself. She doesn't need to remind you. Maura Kelly doesn't need to remind the people that read her column. That when we see someone that's overweight, or we see people, these unfortunate people that are battling this weight problem, or like the ladies that you saw on the ship that night, those women were dancing with a little skinny man, a little man. And you can well imagine the debilitation, psychological debilitation, of being a little skinny man with a wife that's a big, fat... I don't know what else to say. What does that do to a man? But you don't go public with it. You don't say it. You don't, as they say now, what's the word they use? The kids say, you don't put it on blast. You don't
put it on blast.
Right, you don't put it on blast. And that's exactly what this Maura Kelly did. And when she did that, she rolled back decades of progress we've made in trying to get these overweight people to understand that while we recognize they've got a right to eat, if they want to eat, they can eat themselves to death if they want to, watch them eat, and then put down a piece of food, put down a greasy turkey leg, and then immediately with the same lips, glistening with grease, planting them on the lips of a loved one. Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
Are you being overly dramatic?
No, you can ask your audience. I get the mail, too. that.
But are you being overly dramatic? And isn't it insulting? I mean, we're, you know.
I don't want to talk about this, Phil. That Maura Kelly woman forced us to talk about it. That's the problem. I didn't want to talk about this any more than you did. But this woman put it public, and now we have to discuss it public.
877-876-PHIL. Let me go over to our phone calls here tonight. We have Leanne on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Leanne. You're on with Father James McCorders.
Father James McCorders, my name is Leanne Mills, and I am a Catholic girl. How dare you ever say that children should be segregated from one another because they are overweight?
Well,
you need to
you
go back
to
your Bible.
Dancing
you
together.
Need to read your tenement again. You are in no position to judge anyone.
You're overweight,
ever.
Aren't you?
Children,
you're overweight, aren't you?
Children.
Yes, she
they
is.
Deserve
she's
to
she's
be
loved. I agree with you. But why would you hide behind the child when the weight issue is your own?
I'm sorry, say it again.
I said, why would you hide behind the child when the weight issue is your own?
Are you telling me I have a 14-year-old son? My son
yes.
stands 6 feet, 2.5 inches tall. He weighs 256 pounds and wears a size 14.
Oh, God have mercy.
Excuse me?
I said, God have mercy on that child. 6'2", 280 pounds, and he's 10? How old did you say it was, 10 or 11?
My son is 14 years old.
And he's 6'2", 280. I don't know how you're doing the boy a favor. I don't know how you're doing the boy a favor by saying to him, you go right ahead and eat something that's greasy or what have you.
My son is 6'2", and he weighs 256.
Is he eating grease? Is he eating grease?
Did I give him grease? No, I breastfed, Father.
What's that?
I breastfed my son. He's healthy. Check your age bracket and check your documentation.
What's that got to do with... What has that got to do...
My son does not eat grease. My son plays
football. You're breastfeeding... At the age of 14, you're breastfeeding him?
No, my son plays football.
That's exactly... At the age of 14... You said you breastfed him?
She said she breastfed him as an infant.
All right.
I didn't breastfeed him now. That would be disgusting.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. Well, here's what I want you to do. I want you to be honest with me.
Sure.
How big are you? Let's talk. Let's talk turkey.
Okay.
How big are you?
I'm sorry. I'm driving,
how,
so you're going to...
How big are you? How tall are you, and how heavy are you?
Okay, I'm 5'7", and what I weigh is none of your business.
Okay, so that means you're pushing 300.
No, I'm
and
not pushing
this is
300,
why,
and how dare you make those kind of assumptions? And
why couldn't I? Your son is 6'2", 300, or whatever you said. Why wouldn't I assume that you're hefty as well? And what I'm trying to say, I never told Maura Kelly to write that column. I did not want her to write that column. She wrote the column. Now I have to talk to people, and I have to say to the young ones. How tall are you? How tall am I?
Father, how tall are you?
5'5".
You're 5'5" tall. So my
yes.
son, at 6'2" tall, at age 14.
Right. It's a freak.
Phil Hendry.
Boy.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. It's the number to the Phil Hendry Show every night here from 10 to 1 on the Pacific Coast, 1 to 4 on the East Coast. We have Father James McCorders joining us because of this column that Maura Kelly wrote in Marie Claire, which is a magazine website, saying that watching the Mike and Molly show was gross. Watching overweight people have affection for each other is gross. Watching overweight people dancing, having affectionate moments, having physically affectionate moments, is gross and is disturbing. Father McCorders, you work with overweight kids. You work with the San Gabriel Valley Diversity Council. You've said on the show, You don't much disagree with that.
Well, I'm not here to cause the disturbance. I heard the last lady, and I want you to be very much assured that when I say I agree with that, I don't agree with it with enthusiasm. I'm not agreeing with an enthusiastic voice. I'm saying that what the young lady wrote in her column, not too far from what the reality is in our country today. In working with the young people who are overweight, and in working with these young people with physical exercise, I've taken a page from something that I'm known for in our clerical work and in the parish, in working with these children. They have often called me the Jesus of the overweight children. I don't compare myself to Jesus, but in many ways, my path in trying to get these fat kids to get out and move their bodies is almost, I feel as if I know what Jesus went through going up to Mount Calvary, falling and having his face wiped, and Simon and so forth, and being beaten. I feel as our Lord did. And so what I did in one of the exercise classes is brought in a fairly substantial cross, like the kind that the Romans might have used. And we had this hewn from a very heavy and dense wood. And had the children, had some of these fat, one of these fat kids do a squats and leg lifts, you know, or put his feet under to do some crunches. And
you had a what? A cross? Like a crucifix?
Yes, like a, this was a big cross that we had hewn, as if it was the one they used on our Lord.
And you had the kids doing what, deep knee bends? That's very heavy. And what's the point of the cross?
It was to get them to identify with what the rest of us who don't have this fat, the fat hanging, what we have to deal with, what our lives are like in remaining silent as they, all right, as they kiss and rub each other. It's for me.
Kissing and rubbing? You're talking about kids.
Well, but some, when they become adults. But I never wanted to talk about this publicly if it wasn't for that woman in that magazine who decided she was such a lousy writer. And she decided to write a column about this, and now she's got everyone talking about it. You know and I know that people that don't have this kind of weight problem, we never would have opened our mouths.
Well, now that you are opening your mouth, you say that you have the kids doing deep knee bends with a crucifix. Because you want them to know what the rest of us go through, having to watch them kiss each other. Not what Jesus went through, but...
Yes, Jesus, too. That goes on, those are that saying. If I said this is what Jesus went through, they'll go, yeah. But if I say to them, this is what you're putting me through, me, Father James Aquinas, that's a whole different... That's a cat that's different. It's different from a horse. It's a horse that's a different... from a cat, you know.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call here. I have Dave. Go ahead, Dave. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Father James Recorders.
Father, how are you this evening? Good morning.
Yes, sir. I'm very good. Thank you.
First, I want to say, Father, God bless you, because you really need to be blessed right now, because you are so off base, you have no clue. You know, I kind of changed a little bit of what I was going to say, because now you're talking about you have your overweight, and I'm not going to use the word fat because it's demeaning. You have your overweight kids in class using a crucifix to exercise with? An oversized crucifix?
They're using it as a barbell, as you'd use a barbell. And you're doing these deep bends
okay. As
if it was a barbell across the shoulder.
You have zero credibility right now. You realize that? Do you realize that women in America right now, the perfect size is not perfect, the size zero anymore? Do you realize that?
Zero credibility. When I say that there are, everyone in this country is uncomfortable
no,
when you see
don't,
two
don't
fat
ride the
people.
Fence. Don't.
How am I riding
don't.
The fence? How am I riding the fence when I say that all people are uncomfortable when they see fat people kissing? You're riding the fence because you want to appear as if you're an understanding man, and you know and I know that you're not. Are you?
I'm a very understanding.
You're not an understanding.
Man.
No, you're not an understanding, mate. You also suffer the sin of ego as you sit there and judge others. I'm telling you that
I'm
as human beings, we
all.
Look. Oh, not at all. No, not at all. Of course not. I am telling you that
you're
all of us, as human beings, you're hiding behind the fact that you've judged me multiple times since you came on this program. You're hiding behind the fact that your ego does not allow you to admit that you're a judgmental man and that you're a man of weakness. And you hide
really?
Behind
that. Really? I am a strong, Christian, God-fearing man, and you are the one
who... No strong Christian, God-fearing man says that he's a Christian, God-fearing man. He lets his actions speak. He does not have to advertise as if in a billboard. And yet you do. And
you are way off.
I'm glad I'm laying some truth on you.
I really do.
I'm glad I'm laying some truth on you. That's the same thing as saying, you've got me, Father. I'm yours.
You're a sad, sad man.
You haven't told me why. All you've done is call me names. Where is he? Is he gone?
I guess he's gone. 877.
Look what I did. See what I did with that Bible banger? Oh, man.
Whoa. What do you mean with a Bible banger?
Well, you know the guy's probably from a four square somewhere or other. But let me tell you.
Well, what is that supposed to mean?
What it means is I made short work of him. Guy coming in here trying to tell a Catholic priest where... Woo! Oh, man. I love it. I love it so.
877-876-PHIL. Let's move on to another phone call. And it is Andrew. Go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show, Andrew.
I just wanted to comment to the father here about not segregating fat kids from thin kids, because that's just going to leave them open to not being able to handle, dealing with persecution when they get older. You know what I mean? Like they're not going to know how
I don't know. I don't know what you mean. What you have to do is you have to show the children that this is their plight in life until such time as they can lose this weight. This lady wrote this column and said we don't want to see these people making love to each other. How many pornographic movies are sold of fat people? I don't know. I don't watch that.
What does that have to do with anything?
What is the market for a fat man making love to a fat lady? Yeah.
What does that have to do with anything? Yeah, the man's right.
What does it have to do with anything? What was the column about? The column was about the fat people showing affection and nobody wants to see it.
Well, she wasn't talking about porn. She was talking about, fat people kissing each other.
Right. And all these people agreed with her.
Well, they did agree with her. And then you said because she went public, everybody started jumping down her throat.
Exactly. She should have kept her mouth shut.
I think the father here has more of a problem with fat people than the lady who wrote the column. Because he's trying to segregate them from the whole country.
You're
making two different types of people now. You got, there's fat, you got your fat sheep, and now you got your thin sheep. Oh, we got to keep the fat sheep away from the thin sheep because the thin sheep get disgusted by them. Who's saying they're disgusted by them? You're saying you're disgusted by them. I got a fat dad, a fat mom, and fat brothers.
And you're fat.
I love them with all of my heart. And
how big are you?
Kiss anybody, you know?
No, but you got a thing about, you do have a thing about sheep. Because like five times you said sheep. What's that? You see, we do reveal a little of ourselves the more we go blah, 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 blah. And you were running it.
Wait a minute. He's talking about sheep as in the flock.
Well, I noticed he didn't tell me how big he is.
I figured,
how big are you?
You know, I'd use a term that a Catholic priest might
you?
Be able to understand.
How big are you?
But I guess I was a little, you know, too
sophisticated we don't
for
use that
you.
Term.
Your mind's off.
We don't use that term. Sophisticated? No, we don't use that term anymore because we have cities now, not farms.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
But I can tell you this. As long as you're making fun of fat people behind their back, that's where it needs to stay. That's what I said. And because I said don't go public with it, everybody's jumping down my throat.
Not everybody feels the way that you feel.
Everyone feels the way. Don't worry about it.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's move on to Becky. Becky in Kennewick, Washington. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Becky, go ahead, please.
Hi, Phil. I want to make the point that this priest, I don't feel he should be anywhere near children. You take children in their most vulnerable time, especially when they're becoming teenagers. And then you tell them that they have to be separated, that they have to be hidden because they look different.
I just tell them, go to behind the sheet. There's a sheet that divides the dance floor.
You know, that's you shouldn't be around children. You should not be anywhere near children.
This is just telling them to go and dance in this area here. I'm not saying I want to go over and molest them.
I don't care. You're hurting them much more. You're hurting them psychologically.
Well, how do you know I'm hurting them and I'm not just hurting you?
They're not good enough to be seen in public, that we have to hide you. And you know,
that's what we all think.
It
wasn't
that long. It's just
isn't that what we all think?
That all
we
of
all
us
think
can't
that way.
Be cookie cutter perfect.
Becky,
it's
I know
too
that when
bad
you were a teenager,
God
I remind you when you were a kid.
Different. And, you know, you can say whatever you want to say, but here's the bottom line.
I'm simply saying, am I
you
reminding you of a time when
children.
You were a young lady
that's
and you were
what
big?
You do. You hurt children.
You don't know that
and
because you're not young
not
enough.
That's not right. I don't care who you are. That's not right.
I'm a priest. I happen to be a priest, and you've got to watch it.
I don't care what you're a
priest. Phil, she's going way over the line now, Phil.
What do you mean?
Well, she's giving me a hard time.
I don't care
priest.
If you're a priest. I left the Catholic Church years ago.
You don't care if I'm a priest? Are you Catholic?
You know what? You're a priest, but you don't act like
a Are you a Catholic and you're talking to me like that?
I am a Catholic. I was baptized a Catholic.
Oh, yeah. You're,
but let
okay,
me tell you
it's on
something.
Now. All right, it's on now.
It doesn't matter what
when I work with those
mean.
Children, I have those children exercise.
You
do you take them out to exercise? Do you try to get the fat off their ass? No, you don't.
They're not as good. As other children,
I'm having them doing deep knee bends with a crucifix. I'm having them exercise. I'm having them exercise.
Right. Yeah, let's have them do push-ups under the crucifix because that's really going to help their ego. That's going to just do wonders.
I'm not interested in the ego right now. I'm interested in getting the fat off their, excuse my language, ass.
Really, because you're a justifier? Because
everyone is, including you. Becky, no, because people weren't honest enough with you as a child to say to you, Becky, you're a poor,
you
you're a fat
no
kid.
You have no idea
got
what I was like as a child, and you're diverting the argument.
No, but you
the
were a
thing
fat
is,
kid, right?
The thing is,
you were. You
it,
were
it doesn't
a fat
matter
kid.
What I was. Again, you're diverting
you're
the argument.
But you were big.
You're trying
were you
to
big?
Take it off of what
but
you're
you
doing
had
to
big,
children.
You had big legs. You had big, thick legs, right? Of course you did.
Does it matter?
Well, you forget about what the lady had. We're talking about the kids, and this is what's been the point here. Now, you're saying that the kids are doing deep knee bends. And what about this thing where you imagine yourself as Jesus?
All right, Phil, don't make a big deal out of that. I said that as I work with the overly fat children, sometimes I think I feel like Jesus stumbling, going up the hill.
You know,
because
I think Jesus accepted everybody for just what they were. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Really.
But that's what I was.
Yeah, you're. Well, no, he didn't. He didn't accept them for all who they were.
Oh,
he,
really?
He did not. Were any of the apostles fat? No, they weren't.
How do you
Why?
Know that? How do you know that?
They were not. There's no way they could have been fat.
Why?
What?
Why? How do you know?
First of all, how far did Jesus preach? He preached across the countryside. He preached in every hamlet, every town. Are you trying to tell me that they're covering 30, 40 square miles and he's got a fat slob bringing up the
how
rear?
Do you know
I don't think so.
How do you know
Wait
he
a minute.
Didn't?
How does a fat man cover all that territory and stay fat? Yeah.
I don't know, but you know what?
Well, I do. I do.
Well, what if it was a miracle?
What do you mean a miracle? What's that supposed to mean? He miracled his ass all the way up?
You know, Father, your language, too, is a little...
Let's not get off the point. If Jesus is humping it over a 50-square-mile radius, he ain't got no fat man.
Yeah,
it's impossible.
And I'll go back to the original point, which is you don't
right.
need to be around children.
Why? Because I made sense? Because I said that there's no way a fat
because
boy.
You
because you're segregating the children and you're saying, you fat kids behind this sheet. What do you mean a sheet?
Well, that's all we had. And I just said, you got to get back there. Because, as you know,
maybe
it upsets the parents
the
of the skinny kids.
And just lock
yeah,
them
and just have a complete... Listen, Becky, thank you very much for your call. A world-famous Phil Hendry show. We have heard some pretty strange stuff tonight. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Father James McWhorter's on our show. We'll be back in a world-famous Phil Hendry show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry show.
50 square miles. There's no way.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Our program this evening with Father James McWhorter is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. You can also watch us online, live streaming video and audio right now at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. Father, I know you have a Bible verse, but let me just say this. The points of view that you have been presenting here this evening essentially boil down to one thing, that Maura Kelly, the woman who was complaining about seeing Mike and Molly kissing on TV, the two overweight people, she's right, and that everybody feels that way, and the only mistake she made was going public with it. And so this sense that looking at fat people having affection for each other is disgusting is actually true. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I've been trying for a solid hour to say that. I've been trying for a solid hour to say, yes, of course, that's how we feel, and we have to do something. Well, let me say that the Bible in Corinthians becomes clear that God doesn't want, he doesn't want us to be overweight or large or fat. Or do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God? You're not your own, for you were bought with a price. So glorify God in your body. You're not your own. You're bought with a price, you see. And that's to say that we belong to God. And if we belong to God, we're going to do the best we can at purifying the temple. Remember in Genesis chapter 1, verse 29, there's another beautiful phrase. And God said, behold, I have given you every plant yield seed that is on the face of all the earth, and every seed in every tree with seed in its fruit, and you shall have them for food. And so we read that Bible passage, and we think in all of our selfishness and our greed, it gives us permission to shovel it in, to eat everything we see, to suck down.
And you're saying that now people are taking from the Bible an excuse to be fat.
Absolutely. If you read that phrase, God gave us the sweet fruit in the... Oh, you can just taste it, can't you? That's how well God wrote. And so... I must say to you, I love these children that people are talking about. The lady, she said her son, but I have to be honest, he's morbidly obese, a lot of these children. God help us all. If some child like that big kid, you know the one?
The big kid.
The big kid, the lady that...
Oh, the lady was talking about her big son?
Right, right. If you take a big kid and you marry him to some big girl... That's where you get a big, you get another big one. And
what are you giving me, Jimmy the Greek here, man? We're talking about...
Well, no, man. I'm not man.
That's what you're doing.
It's obvious, Phil, I think, to anyone. I'm a priest. And
just because you're a priest, as we found out to our detriment, doesn't mean you know anything.
Oh, I get it. So I'm one of those guys who likes to fool around with the little kids. Is that it? Huh? Is that what you're saying? I like to touch little Susie? Well, I'm not.
And I didn't say that, but I'm saying just because you're a priest doesn't mean you know anything about life. Maybe you got your nose too far in a Bible.
When you, the lady's big kid is what we're talking about.
That's who you're bringing up.
All right. You take a big guy and put it together with a big woman and you get that big kid.
Yeah, you're doing Jimmy the Greek, okay?
I'm doing Jimmy the Greek. You've got a lot of nerve. You know that?
Father, next time, okay?
Maybe there will...
877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Next time.
Phil Hendry.
You take that big man and you put it...
Go to talkradionetwork.com for more information.